Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 39. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week, it's all about the anticipation before Rogue One, guys. This is the last episode before we've seen the first Star Wars film that's not about the Skywalker family. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hi, I'm also super excited.
I know, right? Anyway, if you want to get involved in our conversation, guys, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. And I will tell you, this is the last week before Rogue One. You may want to try to pick up Star Wars Catalyst. It is amazing as an audiobook. I read through it once already, and I'm listening to it as an audiobook. It's so good. Danya, what do you think about that? Have you had a chance to listen to it at all?
The audiobook, no, but I have read about half of the book now, and it's really good.
It's so good, right?
So good.
I know. It's kind of amazing. Also, we have merch for sale. T-shirts and buttons are up on our website, resistanceradio.net. They are on sale right now for the holiday season. So definitely, if you're interested in a Resistance Radio t-shirt, it's a very cool X-Wing design. Or if you're a fan of buttons, I know I am. I put them on my bag and in my car. I don't necessarily recommend you putting them all over the place like I do, but you definitely can, so definitely check that out. Also, we are currently looking for a few new co-hosts to lend their opinions and voice to our discussion about the Star Wars universe. If you find yourself wanting to argue with me, No one will. But really, if you want to argue with Danya or Eric, send us an email at contact@resistanceradio.net, or you can do that through our website. All interested should have a microphone and a way to record themselves. We're also happy to help you out if you're new to it. We were all new to podcasting at one point in time. So if you are interested, definitely send us an email and we'll get back to you soon. All right. So, Danya, we have a lot of news. Like I said, this is the lead up to Rogue One. Like, everything is just like, oh my gosh, Rogue One, Rogue One, Rogue One. Are you excited?
Yes. Okay. I'm in countdown mode now. It's a little crazy because I'm just like, I'm so excited. So excited. Are you still watching every single thing that comes out, or are you starting to go cold turkey now?
I'm not going. I can't do the cold turkey thing. My wife is super cold turkey. She gets mad when I put the trailer. I think I mentioned it before, where I put the trailer on. She's like, I don't want to see it. I just want to be surprised and enjoy it in the theater. Like, she doesn't like spoilers. She did the same thing with the Harry Potter movies and the books and everything. Like, she didn't want any of the spoilers. But me, on the other hand, I want every bit of information. Like, that's my personality. I like to be the one who and this character, Saw Gerrera, was in Star Wars Clone Wars, and he's got a 4-episode arc. You should definitely check it out. I'm that type of person. I like to have all the extra information. My wife finds it annoying, but it's what I am. It's what I do. So before we get into all the wonderful Rogue One news, and there's a lot, and just Star Wars news in general, we missed your kind of review of Star Wars Rebels. Was it the Wethenku job? The one with Hondo.
Yeah.
What did you think of that episode? Because you hadn't seen that when we recorded last week, and I had already watched it, and I was kind of like, meh, it's an okay, it was interesting, Ezra.
Yeah, it was kind of filler-ish episode. It wasn't a bad episode. It wasn't groundbreaking by any means. It was just Hondo at Hondo's best. Ezra did make me want to throttle him a little bit. I'm sorry, but the way that he was treating Zeb made me want to smack him upside the head and be like, why? Why are you doing this? Stop it. Zeb is undeniably qualified to be able to lead a mission. And also, Ezra has a huge blind spot when it comes to Hondo, so he was never going to be impartial to lead the mission. He was always going to be very biased because Ezra is still so young and trusts Hondo and believes him more often than he doesn't believe him. So I feel like Zeb was the right choice for leading that mission. But Ezra, oh my god.
I know.
Just it was, his whole attitude through the episode, I was like, take a chill pill and also stop being so, like, weirdly passive aggressive. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know. Like I said, when I watched the episode, I was kind of disappointed. But I will tell you this. In hindsight, with this week's episode, you know, Zeb was not featured much in this week's episode. But having Zeb have led the during the previous episode, and what Zeb said in the current episode, The Inside Man, and kind of how Zeb kind of played a pretty significant role, even though he wasn't on screen a lot. I was glad for that episode. Like, in hindsight, as a whole, it was a really good episode now. Whereas before, last week, I was kind of like, meh. But now that I've seen an Inside Man, I appreciate it a lot more. And we'll talk about the Inside Man in just a second, but do you agree with me or no?
Yeah, no.
I think it was good, you know, growth for Zeb. As much as Ezra annoyed me, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So, an Inside Man, this past week's episode of Star Wars Rebels, it was kind of awesome. They went back to Lothal, which was kind of like a homecoming for Ezra, and obviously Kanan joining him. And they went and they infiltrated a special, Empire factory. Developing a new weapon. We don't know what, but they're developing a new weapon. And Thrawn shows up. Well, Thrawn was pretty brutal in this episode. What do you think? What do you think of Thrawn in this episode in general, Danya?
This is what I've been waiting for.
This is the Thrawn we've been waiting for. This is the Thrawn we're excited for. I'm so happy with it. I'm glad that you agree with me.
Yeah. Yes. So this is everything that I've been waiting for them to show off. Like, you still had the really subtle bits about Thrawn and Thrawn's personality in here. For example, having the crew of the Ghost, like, all of their, like, their art and their profiles and everything up and in the background as he's talking and briefing the rest of the agents when the rebels have infiltrated the base. But, like, the quiet sort of brutalness of him, you know, is incredible. Like, the fact that he's there just in the first place because that factory has a very high rate of failure on weaponry.
Production
of weaponry. So when it gets out in the field, it's causing mass casualties of Imperial forces. So he's basically there to, like, find out what the hell is going on, and essentially he just makes someone who signed off on a speeder sit on it and accelerate it until it explodes and kills him.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. That was scene was really brutal, especially when, like, you know, the character was part of the rebel cell that helped Ezra and Kanan get in. And he's trying to pull back the speed because, you know, as he revs it up, it starts to overheat. And as he pulls back, Thrawn's like, no, I want to see it go at full speed, even though it's, you know, he knows it's going to explode. And Thrawn just turns it all the way up and boom, explosion. And it was just like, I really was like, for a kid's show, that was really kind of like, you know, it's the Thrawn that I want, but man, it took me back a little bit. Like, I was just like, wow, you know?
Yeah, that was definitely towing the line with, like, playing with darkness, because even when there are deaths, they're very subtle about it a lot of the time on Rebels. Like, they don't always explicitly say if someone is dead or not. But in this instance, it's kind of like,
you saw a charred helmet afterwards, is what you saw. And I think that's what really threw me. That was what took me aback the most, was like, oh my, like, you didn't see the explosion. You didn't see him, like, burning or anything like that. You didn't see or hear screams at all. But you saw, like, after you heard the explosion, it turned to Kanan and Ezra reaction, and then a helmet just kind of rolled into the scene, and it was charred and burned, and it was just like, wow, like, that was, it was like essentially like Vader's helmet after, like, you know, we see in Force Awakens. Like, it was literally charred and destroyed, and you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what happened. It was just like, wow, I was surprised. But what about Ezra and Kanan in that one? It was interesting to see, like, almost like a buddy cop. Like, they're not really apprentice and master at this point anymore. Like, at least I don't feel like they, you know, obviously there's still that dynamic, but I don't really see that Obi-Wan, Anakin type thing or Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan type dynamic with them. I see a different, more like peer friend, closer than to what we saw at the end of Revenge of the Sith, but even more so, like, literally like peers versus like master and apprentice. What do you think? Do you agree, or are they, there's different dynamics between the two?
I don't know that I... Ezra is still so young. He still makes, like, stupid mistakes. He's still rash. He still doesn't think things through. He still charges in head first.
But so Kanan lets him. Like, that's the thing, is, like, Kanan lets him because they're friends. I don't know. Like, seeing them, it was really interesting. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see them as equals, mostly okay. Because Ezra is so young, and as from the perspective of being part of the audience and being able to oversee everything, like, he absolutely is not on the same level as Kanan.
I agree.
He makes stupid mistakes that he makes, like, several times. He doesn't just make a mistake once. He doesn't always learn from it. He makes the same mistakes over and over and over again, and it's a little infuriating. This isn't to say that I dislike Ezra. I am still, like, quite invested in him as a character and how he interacts with everyone on the crew, but at the same time, he can be infuriating, and I guess it's because of his age. But even with that said, there are characters who are very close in age to Ezra who aren't nearly as infuriating.
Yeah. I don't know. Ezra is just, I think he we're meant to see all his mistakes, so we grow with him as we watch the show. So it's just an interesting dynamic there. And then we learn who Fulcrum is.
Yes, which
is not Ahsoka. We knew that, but
yeah, it's my favorite thing. Like, this, so good.
Agent Kallus. You know what's interesting is we knew it was Agent Kallus, so obviously being the viewers, at least a few of us did. But then you have, like, you know, Ezra and Kanan not really trust that Kallus was the, you know, was Fulcrum, even though he had all the code words and everything, and it was like, hey, this is him. What was really creepy, though, is not only did, you know, Kallus, you know, help to get them out and everything, but Thrawn, like, at the very end, literally, like, I feel like Thrawn has an inkling that Kallus might be the spy.
Oh, I think he knows.
I think he's thinking it already, but he's not 100% sure, and he would hate to waste a good agent if he wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah. You know, but what I mean? Even, like, that, even with that said, Thrawn was basically like, you know, not that he wanted necessarily to out this agent or, like, kind of get rid of them. He wants to turn them back and use them.
Yeah, which is like, as a tool for the Empire. Like, he wants to basically. He wants to be like, hey, you become a double agent now. Like, it's kind of, wow. And what was really cool is, just like I said, when we talked about Zeb, at the very end of the episode, you know, after we find that Kallus is Fulcrum and he helps Ezra and Kanan escape, when they're on the coast, the crew of the Ghost is on the ship and they're talking about Kallus being Fulcrum, you know, and they mentioned that Zeb recruited him. Zeb was like, well, we didn't kill each other on the ice planet.
So I guess we're friends now.
So I guess we're friends, and maybe I did recruit him. Like, he doesn't even realize, like, all the things he said about, you know, the Republic, you know, the rebels and what they're fighting for and things, or what Kallus at the beginning of season one kind of thought the Empire stood for.
Yeah.
And, you know, without sidetracking too much and spoiling anything in Catalyst, it's really interesting. Catalyst takes place between the beginning of the Clone Wars all the way through to kind of, I'm not going to say the ending, but it goes through the end of the Clone Wars into the beginning of the Empire. And, like, so it's got a long timeline. And it's interesting to see people, you know, working for the Republic, the Grand Army of the Republic, and then instantly shift to the Empire and think that they're bringing about peace, when obviously we know the Empire is kind of evil and what yeah. they've, you know, what they do. They're building something called the Death Star. I don't care about you, but no matter what kind of PR company you have, no way can you change the word Death Star into something happy-go-lucky, you know, fuzzy type thing. You know, yeah. like, it's called a Death Star. What can it do? Bring death? It's the size of a star. You know, I get, you know, anyway, that's beyond the point. But definitely, it's interesting to see Kallus has had a change of heart, and all because of Zeb. And the episode before really allowed Zeb to grow as a leader and kind of what his character was. So I liked it.
Yeah. Kallus is one of those characters that I've felt like has had an incredibly satisfying arc. And it's so interesting to see someone who genuinely did believe at one point in what the Empire stood for, or what he thought the Empire stood for. And then through his interactions with, like, the rebels, and through basically having his eyes opened a little bit, he has learned for himself and made, like, a choice to basically turn to the other side, because their ideals and what they stand for is closer to what he believes in. And it's just been such a satisfying arc to watch him come around to be Fulcrum, basically.
Yeah. I agree. So, it's good to see kind of, you know, I'm glad he's got a good arc, even though he hasn't been on the show a lot. But I want to move on to some of the news, because there's so much stuff we have to talk about today. The latest Rogue One TV spot, number 26. So if you go to YouTube, Rogue One TV spot number 26, or we'll have a link in our show notes. At about 17 seconds in, you see the flotilla of rebel fighters, X-Wings, you know, Krillian vessels, the U-Wing. And in the bottom, almost bottom middle, you would say, right, Danya? Bottom
yeah.
middle of the shot?
Yeah, it's
bottom
yeah,
middle to the left
there.
A little bit is a ship that looks remarkably like the Ghost. What do you think? Do you think they're putting the Ghost in Rogue One just as like purely as like an Easter egg?
Man, I'm hoping so, because they when we were at Star Wars Celebration and Dave Filoni was talking about Rebels and the adjustment of the look of the show this year. In terms of like the visuals and stuff and the color palette that they chose, they said that it was a very conscious decision for them to change the look of Rebels and the color palette of Rebels to more closely resemble the color palette that was being used in Rogue One. So they very consciously have changed the entire tone of this season to match Rogue One, because timeline wise they're so close together, and essentially Rebels is leading into Rogue One eventually. So yeah. It would make an incredible amount of sense, considering the Ghost is one of the first iconic
right?
ships of like the rebellion, because when you know Thrawn undeniably believes that the Ghost is kind of a huge part of the Rebel Alliance and the Rebellion. So the fact that it's that recognizable and that iconic, that it wouldn't be seen at all in some kind of film that is focusing so heavily on like a wider slice of the rebellion rather than the very narrow one that we get when we're focusing on the Skywalker saga, it wouldn't make sense not to see that, even if they don't go onto the ship or we don't see any of the characters or we don't see anything else. If we just see an establishing shot that this is the ghost, then it makes a lot of sense that that could be it. And it's a very direct link between the two, other than the obvious link, which is Saw Gerrera.
Yeah, well, and Saw is direct from, you know, Clone Wars. I mean, obviously, there's a 4-episode arc and everything, and same name, same person, you know, it's obvious. Yeah. But this one was really nice. It's like a little nudge there, so I was really happy with it. Mm-hmm. Also, someone pointed out, I don't see it, I might have to watch the trailer again, but someone pointed out is the ship that was known as Dash Rendar's ship before, the other YT freighter, which is Iron Squadron ship. They said it's also in there early on, and I'm watching for it, looking for it, and I just don't see it, but I saw people commenting about that, that it's also in there. The Iron Squadron ship is in that same scene, and I just, like I said, I'm looking through it, but I'm not, I don't know, it's such a short thing. It's at 7 seconds into the trailer. It's super quick. Not 17, 7 seconds in, so it's super quick there. But definitely worth checking it out. See if you see the ghost like we see it there. It's pretty obvious. Engines, you know, same alignment, everything, same design. Yeah, it looks, to me, I feel like it is, but, you know, we'll see. But speaking of Rogue One and that shot that we just talked about, Rogue One is the first film to feature a first-person X-Wing battle. Did you get a chance to look at this interview with Gareth Edwards?
I did not, but first-person X-Wing battle, hell yeah, because I know, now, right? I can pretend that I'm flying the X-Wing.
Yeah, so obviously the original Star Wars had POV shots during the space battle. Obviously, A New Hope, the Death Star run, you know, you kind of saw it, but it wasn't really like, you weren't really moving. So Gareth Edwards said, when we were filming the X-Wing footage in the film, we had the X-Wing cockpit mounted on a gimbal so we can move around like it was really flying. Then all around where this, you know, the screens in 180 degrees, where they were projecting space and this pre-animated flight path as the X-Wing was moving around, it was really flying. So like, he was super excited. And, you know, it's one of those things, we've seen kind of some of the shots, but it's obviously going to be the X-Wings flying in through the, you know, the shield on Scarif. It just, I'm just beyond ecstatic about this. Like, it just, like, the, you know, the steals from the trailer, I can't wait to get, you know, again, next week you'll hear us talk about it. Like, I feel like I should be taking a notepad into the film and, like, writing notes down as we watch it, but I'm not going to do that.
Don't do that.
I'm not going to do that. Maybe on my 10th time I will, but the first time I won't. But I'm super excited about this. Like, one, X-Wings were always my favorite thing. I think I mentioned a story once where I used to take the brown cushions of my, you know, my couch when I was like 3 or 4 and put it at an angle, and then there it was, the X-Wing cockpit and stuff. So yeah. I'm super excited to be an X-Wing pilot.
I have very fond memories of being in, I think it was Tenerife. It was either Tenerife or Lanzarote. It's one of the Spanish, basically, holiday resorts. It's very, very popular for people in Britain to go to one or either or both of them, especially when you've got young families. They're not particularly expensive holidays and they're fairly close, so it's easy to go to. But I have very fond memories of being quite young on the resort by the side of the pool of one of those, and using the white plastic sun loungers when it got dark, and these places are in the middle of nowhere and the lights are really low, so you've got all of the stars in the sky right over you, and basically sitting on those with friends and playing Star Wars and having X-Wing battles and pretending that these white sun loungers, plastic sun loungers, were X-Wings. Yeah.
It's, I'm so excited. We're going to be in X-Wings again. It's, of all things, like, as much as I love The Force Awakens and their X-Wings, they were new X-Wings. They weren't the classic X-Wings we know from A New Hope and the original trilogy and stuff. So, even though there's a slight difference to the engines, like, that's kind of all it looked like, and painting, this is what really got me. Like, I'm just beyond ecstatic about this. But moving on, this is something that I will say is a must-watch for all Star Wars fans. We have a Rogue One ad for the hashtag Create Courage campaign that just totally pulls at the heartstrings from Globe Studios in the Philippines. Basically, just to give you an idea, it is a ad to where a little boy centered around a kid named Alex who wears a stormtrooper helmet to school every day, and his big brother walks with him and even dresses up.
Is that not a girl?
Hmm?
It was a girl.
Was it a girl? I don't know.
It was a little girl.
Maybe it was. I don't know. I'm reading the notes here that I have. It says Alex is what it was, but maybe it was a girl though.
Alex is a girl's name as well.
Okay, maybe it is, but it's centered on Alex. I said he, didn't I?
Yeah.
She, it's a she. It's a girl. Sorry. Not a he, it's a she. She is a sister, and her big brother is also with her throughout the whole thing. I don't want to spoil it too much, but Tanya, I made you watch this before we started before we started the show, because I saw this, I think, yesterday, and I was like, this is kind of awesome, and I wanted to share it with more people. So I wanted to talk about it here. What'd you think of it?
You know exactly what I thought of it.
I told you to stop crying, so...
Yeah, I did start crying over this, and Maggie was like, don't cry, why are you crying? And I'm like,
well, because... I knew why you were crying, because it's just totally, like, it really, like, create courage, like, it shows, like, if you're a Star Wars fan, like, I remember, you know, years ago, there was also another one where there was a, you know, little girl who got bullied because she liked Star Wars, and she had Star Wars stuff, and she ended up getting all these letters from people who like Star Wars and said, hey, I think it's cool that you're a girl and you like Star Wars, or, you know, I'm a girl and I like Star Wars too, like, all these things, you know, because she was a little girl being bullied because she likes Star Wars, because apparently Star Wars is a boys thing, and I don't believe that by any means, obviously. Danya's my co-host here, but this one is just amazing. Like, it really, like, shows, like, people can, you know, just come together.
It shows almost the power of fandom to an extent, because being involved in fandom, it has so much power to do so much good, especially when you find like-minded people through it, or you find something at your core that you share with another person. And something like Star Wars, which does also like push forward messages of inclusiveness, and I guess just everything that it preaches in respect to, like, standing up to, I guess, the bad guys and looking out for each other and all of that sort of thing, and just everything that Star Wars stands for, it's almost diluted in this little ad to basically being there for other people. And it was just a beautiful little it's 2 minutes long, and it made me bawl. So it was just great. It was beautiful, it was touching, and it just shows the power of Star Wars, and in fact just the power of fandom in general, and what you can do so much good when you're a fan of something, and you turn that into to coin another thing that Star Wars does, a force for change.
Yeah, a force for change. Star Wars does all these great things. I just love it. I'm so glad I love Star Wars. Moving on, though, Hollywood Reporter, their Women in Entertainment 2016 article, they talk about Lucasfilm's Force with Kathleen Kennedy. Kathleen Kennedy reveals an executive team that's more than 50% female. So last week we talked a little bit about how Kathleen Kennedy says she wants a female director for a Star Wars film, but she doesn't know anyone who's ready yet. And me and Danya, like, I don't know, like, I'm all for it. And me and you had kind of different opinions. I'm like, well, maybe she's just really careful because, you know, she doesn't want it to be a failure in any possible way. And anyone to say, well, it's because she was a woman. But, you know, at the same time, she is in the position to say, screw it, and be able to put someone there. She is in that position. But right now, if you take a look at it, you know, is she doing it right, having a executive team more than 50%? I don't think any other company is anywhere near that. You know, I know Yahoo's had a couple female executives. Apple has a handful.
Also of note here, it's not just 50% or just over 50% of women. And when you get a lot of women in executive roles in film companies or production companies, you'll tend to find that the majority of them are white. I'm saying this right. I'm saying this as a white woman. Okay. Very aware of my own privilege in respect to there are more opportunities a lot of times that are open to me, even if I do face some kind of prejudice within the workplace, or I don't have as many opportunities as maybe other people. I very much am aware that I have significantly more opportunities than women of color, and that's not right. The one thing that is amazing about the picture that they have also taken of this executive team is that there are women of color involved in this executive team as well. And that's incredible, because the more diversity that you have, the better your projects are going to be, because the more differing opinions that you have, the richer the end product is, because one point of view and one lifestyle and one world experience is never going to make an interesting movie. It just isn't. You need to have multiple points of view adding to the world in order to make something that resonates with countless numbers of people. And I feel like this sort of team is exactly what you need for something like Star Wars, because it started paving the way initially for sci-fi, but now it has the power to do so much more. And this is great. This is a great start. Now it needs to move into stuff like the people behind the camera, the people that are working on set, and all of that. Like, we're getting it in front of the camera a little bit, and now this is the beginning. So I feel like this is great.
I agree.
There's a good balance, but I kind of want to see them setting the example and essentially just being like, why are you guys so slow? Catch up to us. Come on.
Yeah. So I do want to read a quote from Rainn Roberts. She said something in the interview is, the reason Rey is strong and technically capable and compassionate and driven is that the women who were in that room, including Kathy, reflected those qualities. So it's not just, you know, it's one of those things where they never have to say, what would a woman think of a character like this? Because you have a balance of both men and women there. It enters into an interesting discussion, she said in the article, which is really nice that, you know, you're not trying to do focus groups or anything like that. They're able to have a real discussion.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't know, I didn't want to have just another guy on the show. I wanted to have somebody else with a counterpoint of view from a completely different perspective. And Donnie, I think, balances me out fairly well, even though I try to toe the line and be very politically correct. And she'll just be like, nope, I'm going to be my thoughts. And I love it, because I won't always go out there. So, yeah, so I'm really glad for this. But the nice part is she did... Kathleen Kennedy did credit George Lucas for establishing a very inclusive culture that allowed not only her to rise to her position and then obviously take over, but also to be able to create a very inclusive leadership team for Lucasfilm, which at the end, like, depending on how Rogue One does, I'm super excited. I think it's going to do well. If it just is becoming the juggernaut that Force Awakens was, I think people will look to Lucasfilm to be like, hey, what are they doing that we're not? And hopefully I'll be more inclusive, not just for women, but for everyone of all different races, including people of color like myself. So I'm super excited for that.
Yeah.
Moving absolutely. On to, oh, sorry. You guys, something else?
No, I was saying it's absolutely right that I want them so badly to be the example in the industry. Basically.
Yeah, I agree. And see, here's the thing is, we had heard discussions about how, like, I said, I trust the people at Marvel. You weren't so much like, well, I trust the people at Lucasfilm almost explicitly. I was really up in arms about them destroying the, you know, getting, you know, retconning the EU, because I love the EU. And I was so excited to possibly have, like, you know, the sort of the Jedi series and, you know, under, you know, Star Wars 1313, like all these things that were planned for the EU. And they just scrapped it with that. So I was super disappointed. I was like, I don't know. I don't trust it. But with The Force Awakens and the books and the comics, You know, I haven't read comics in years since like the old X-Wing series. And I just love Poe Dameron comic and everything. So it's one of those things where like, I'm super excited for it and I trust them. And Pablo Hidalgo has been super vocal to like give the fan community stuff like, hey, don't worry. We have the story group to make sure everything is tied together. Even something as simple as like mentioning like in the Star Wars show or Rebels Recon that, you know, Sabine and Biggs may have some things together because obviously Sabine has the checker pattern on her armor and Biggs has the checker pattern on his helmet. Like we're building a story for that. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like the connections and everything is just going to be so good. So I believe and I trust in, you know, Lucasfilm and hopefully other people follow suit. But speaking of George Lucas, Gareth Edwards has had a sigh of relief. George Lucas has seen Rogue One, and he likes it. It's not in the article I linked to you, Danya, but apparently he even liked it better than The Force Awakens. What do you think about this?
Conflicted. Because obviously I am very thankful for everything that George Lucas kind of brought to the table in respect to bringing us Star Wars in the first place. And I will forever be indebted to him for like just giving that to us in the first place. But sometimes he's not the best judge of storytelling. He has a lot, he always had a lot of people around him on the original trilogy that reined stuff in, so I don't know how I feel about it. I don't doubt that Rogue One is going to be awesome. I really don't. But for me, I don't feel like George Lucas's approval is the be-all and end-all.
Okay. Well, I get that, but it's kind of one of those things where, like, I don't know about you, but, like, I went to film school, and Star Wars and George Lucas, even American Graffiti and THX 1138, like, everything Lucas did was something that I took inspiration from. And I think Gareth Edwards is the same thing. Like, these are, you know, he was a fan of the films before he did it, and it's one of those things where having the original creator of this universe. Now, you know, he's not... You know, here's the thing. Like, he's not, like, the best filmmaker ever out there. Like, people will argue, you know, different, you know, cinematic styles, storytelling, different things. You know, he's not the best filmmaker out there, but he is a good filmmaker. You know, he has insights to different things. And, you know, I respect it. And the fact that he approves and likes it, it's kind of like, you know, it's the creator's seal of approval. You know what I mean? So, like, I get where Gareth was excited that George liked it. I will say I'm a little surprised that George said he liked it better than Force Awakens, but I'm excited for it because this is a time period where you see all the best characters. You see Darth Vader. You see, you know, the Rebel Alliance form together, that unity that just made us love the Rebel Alliance and Luke Skywalker being the scrappy underdog to destroy this Death Star. So I'm excited for it. I'm happy that Lucas gave him, you know, a thumbs up. I don't know. That's just my opinion on it.
Yeah, no, it's fine, and obviously it's great that for Gareth Edwards that means a lot to him, and it's going to mean a lot to a lot of people. Just, I am in this sort of mindset right now where I appreciate and accept and am very thankful to the creators of certain franchises that I am a huge fan of, like George Lucas, like J.K. Rowling, like all of those people. And I appreciate everything that they have done. I also do, to an extent, also believe in the death of the author, meaning that once their initial canon kind of ends, that you can create and interpret it in your own way. So I feel like where George Lucas has stepped off, I now don't need his approval for anything else because it is other people's vision based on the foundation that he's built. He has handed that off to other people when he sold it, when he sold everything to Disney.
I get that. Okay. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice? Is like, so let's say you write a book, Danya.
Yes.
And it's a story. And J.K. Rowling said, I've read your book. I like it a lot. Would that not be like a, not necessarily like you're pining and waiting for her to give you her thumbs of approval. But wouldn't that be like a good, like, I really respected her as an author. I'm glad that she liked it. It makes me feel good. Like, would you know?
Yeah, to an extent, yes. But I have very complicated feelings about J.K. Rowling right now. So I would be a little conflicted about it.
All right. Well, I'm just saying, you know, it's one of those things where it would be nice. Like, and I get it. So he was happy that Lucas liked it.
Like I said, for some people, and for Gareth Edwards in particular, this is a huge deal for him. And yeah, it'll be a huge deal. It's a huge deal, and it's going to be a huge deal for a lot of Star Wars fans as well. But personally, I don't have a lot of stock in George Lucas approving or disproving of, like, another installment in the franchise. If I like it, and if I get something out of it, and if I kind of connect with it, then that's enough for me.
Okay.
I get
that you don't like George Lucas and you hate him and I don't like you anymore. Moving on, more about George Lucas. K2SO actor Alan Tudyk is worried and he doesn't want to be another Jar Jar Binks. So Tudyk has actually been on the record saying he has put a lot of negative pressure put on himself to avoid the same fate of the Gungan goofball, because we know K2SO is a certain type of humor. He's confident that he won't, you know, replace dethrone R2-D2, C-3PO, or BB-8 as Star Wars' most beloved droids. But to quote him, he's like, "My fear was always, I don't want to go Jar Jar. You don't want to be the character that comes on screen and you're like, oh my god, kill it, somebody, shoot it, at least muzzle that thing. That's the one thing in my head. It wasn't, oh, I hope I'm as good as these other characters. More like, dear God, I hope I'm not as bad as that one character." That was all I quote. Just, that wasn't me. That was Tudyk saying. You know, and it's one of those things, like, just like Jar Jar actor, Ahmed Best, you know, Tudyk is a comedy character. He's kind of slapstick. As an actor, he is kind of funny. You know, he's a comedy character. And his character is completely CGI, you know, just like, you know, Jar Jar was. So it's definitely, I understand his fear. Do you think K2SO is going to be the new Jar Jar?
No.
Gigantz! What's up? He's thinking! I don't know.
Yeah, like, and the reason why I don't think that's going to be the case is that Jar Jar was very much that character that was supposed to resonate with younger audiences. He was almost supposed to be like the mascot character to an extent. He was supposed to just be massive amounts of comedy relief, where I feel like K2SO isn't going to work in the same way as Jar Jar, because from everything that we've seen in, like, the trailers and everything so far, he's very deadpan. He's very dry. He doesn't, I mean, he's a droid. He has no emotion. Not going to be that inflection in his speech. There's not going to be any over-the-top acting. I think he's going to be a very, almost, I don't know what word to use, sardonic, maybe? I feel like it's just going to be a much straighter kind of character. He's going to, like, I feel, fit somewhere in between R2 and 3PO. Okay. Like, I feel like he's going to be somewhere in the range there, and he's not going to fall into this kind of mascot-esque character. Because you could tell straight away from, like, the Force Awakens trailers that BB-8 was going to be this really beloved, really adorable kind of mascot character that they were kind of, you knew. And I love BB-8, and I've bought into it entirely, the whole buying merchandising crap.
I remember being in the theater for Force Awakens, and within the first 10 seconds of the film, as soon as he rolls on screen and kind of beeps and then kind of rolls, you know, rocks back and forth and runs out, like, I'm like, I love this droid already. I love it. Like, I was super, I bought into it already. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so that's what they were aiming for with BB-8. that's probably what they were aiming for with Jar Jar as well.
Yeah.
Is that they were trying to find that niche mascot character in order to be able to sell merchandise, basically. And I don't feel like K2SO is going to fit into that niche.
I agree.
I don't think any... I think Rogue One is standing apart from that kind of classic look at the films where you have the mascot character, you have the usual kind of, like, the Vader character, you have the stormtroopers, you have your heroes, and you know how, like, they're aiming for merchandising and all that sort of thing, but...
Yeah, well, they already have Vader, so there's enough, you know, merchandising off him and, you know, stormtroopers alone, so...
Yeah. But I feel like Rogue One is a war film. It's very much setting itself apart from the style and the feel of the Star Wars saga. And it's entirely purposeful, especially in respect to the fact that this is a standalone. It is a Star Wars story. It is not part of the Star Wars saga, even though it takes place between two of the saga films. And it is about the Rebel Alliance and the Rebellion, which we are very familiar with from the saga stories. But it has set a different tone. It has a different styling. It has a slightly different color palette. So I feel like I understand his worry. But even from, like, just the trailers that we've got so far, I don't think there's any way at all that he's going to fall into the Jar Jar Binks almost aiming for a mascot character territory. So.
No, I agree with you on that. I was just, you know, curious to see what, you know, you thought.
Mm.
Now, I will say, I am interested in K2SO. I've seen a little bit of the stuff from the trailers. Obviously, there's been over 26 different trailers. Since we talked about TV trailer number 26 earlier in the episode. But one of my favorite scenes so far, K2SO, and I think this kind of explains the humor that's there in Rogue One, is in one of the featurettes I watched the other day. I know it's on Apple TV under the trailers app. But Jin shoots a KX series security droid that looks just like K2SO.
K2SO.
And then literally, less than a second later, he says, "Did you know that wasn't me?" And she kind of like pauses and goes, "Of course." So I feel like that's going to be the humor, not necessarily, like, he's going to be so stoic and stuff like that, like dropping things and, you know, him going up to Jin's like, "I will not kill you because my master told me not to." Okay, like, that sort of stuff is going to make him funny.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's going to be, "You get, what's a mis of thinking?" You know, throwing stuff around and accidentally stumbling over and killing, you know, battle droids. So who knows?
Yeah, I don't think that's the tone that they're trying to strike for this film. Like, I feel like it's going to have its moments of levity. It's going to have its lighter moments. It's going to be amusing in its own way. But I feel like going Bodhi into
Rogue,
it.
Rogue One. Yeah, I think it'll be good.
Rogue One is going to be a slightly darker take on Star Wars than maybe we're used to. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think it's going to be very interesting, but I don't think that the kind of humor that we've seen so far in, like, the Star Wars saga movies is going to be applicable in this case. So, not to say that it's not going to have humor, it's just going to have a different kind of humor.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So, we're almost done with the news before we get into some crazy theories before we wrap up the show. But I do want to mention, don't forget, if you miss the red carpet of Rogue One, which is December 10th, Saturday, you can watch it again or live if this gets released early on StarWars.com. So, just like before the Star Wars show, just like with Force Awakens, they will be covering the red carpet of Rogue One. It's happening in L.A. On December 10th. So definitely go to StarWars.com, check that out. If you missed it, because this is released on Sunday and you're like just hearing about it now, go to StarWars.com. They will have recaps just like they did with the Force Awakens red carpet. Now on to some crazy theories. We got a tweet today Or was it yesterday? I don't know. We got a tweet the other day from Twitter user at BeckyLou88 in response to my comment about how, you know, Rey is the daughter of Luke, and you said, well, what if she's a Kenobi or something? She said, if Luke got with Obi-Wan's daughter, Rey could be both a Skywalker and a Kenobi. Explains her power with no training, right? I can see that, you know, if Kenobi had a daughter that we didn't know about in A New Hope or something, and, you know, maybe. I don't know. What do you think, Danya?
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know what Obi-Wan was up to since, like before we see him again in A New Hope. We don't know what his life was like, and it's not as though it's unprecedented that he has either a physical or an emotional attraction to anyone, because we see it happen. It's established that he does have a connection with a woman at one point in the Clone Wars series. So it's not an unprecedented idea that with the Jedi completely gone and the whole order having crumbled out, that he might look for some kind of human connection outside of that. And we know that he's not completely immune to being attracted to someone. So it's entirely possible that he could have had a child and could have had a relationship. What might have happened to them after that, and why he was alone on Tatooine, no way to know. But considering that they've said that they're not done with him in the Star Wars saga films, there is probably space for us to learn more about what he was up to in the time before A New Hope.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. It could happen. Now, I will say, reading Catalyst and watching the Rogue One trailers, obviously Rogue One's not out, so I don't know what happens at the end of it, other than they get the planets to the Death Star. Spoiler, sorry. But Jyn's family believes in the Force very strongly. Jyn also has a kyber crystal that came from a Jedi lightsaber. And Jyn's mother constantly tells her to trust in the Force. What if, this is my theory here, I told you, Rebecca, I'd respond and tell you a new theory on this show. What if, after Return of the Jedi, Jyn was kicking it around still, helping the Rebellion, and her and Luke had a one-night stand, got it on, because, you know, he's all about learning about the Force, she has information about the Force from her parents, and she even had a kyber crystal. And bam, we get Rey. Luke might not even know about Rey. And then that ties Rogue One together with the saga films. Like, what do you think about that? Like, it's just so, like, on the nose, like, obvious, like, tie everything together with a nice, neat little bow that...
I mean, you know, there is a very distinct.
Yeah, you like it. I got it. Yeah, I know I'm right. There we go. I like it. You don't see me, but I'm dusting my shoulder off right now. I got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's
looks
the new theory.
Looks wise, there is no denying that they have had a penchant for casting women who look incredibly similar to one another. So, you know.
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah, I mean, obviously,
Rey or so.
Padme
Rey Skywalker
and Leia look very much alike when you put them side by side. Rey, in fact, looks very similar to both Leia and Padme as well.
And
Jyn. The thing is that Jyn and Felicity Jones also fit into that very classic look that they have. And I don't know if that's intentional.
Did I just figure it out? Episode 39 of Resistance Radio, Mikey just gave you the perfect theory about how Luke gets it on and has Rey. Uh-huh. Boom. There you go.
Well, my thing is saying it's either that they're very purposefully drawing a line between all of these characters, or they have a bias for brunette women with a very particular look.
I don't think the same casting director was in charge of all these films spanning those 40 years. I'm just saying, it happened. This has happened. You know, one night, maybe it's on the indoor moon. You know, the Ewoks are around singing Yub Nub. Jin's there going, good job, everyone. Yeah. Luke's there. I must bring the Jedi Order back together. And boom, baby Rey.
Okay, that's far too soon because Rey is younger than all of the characters.
Maybe back on Yavin, Luke's trying to get a Jedi Temple going, a school. Rey's helping him out. She brings her Kyber crystal. Luke is so thankful. They hit it off. They have a little wine over cheese, and they have a dinner. And there it is. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I told you it was a crazy theory. Who knows, right?
Okay, this isn't the worst theory.
So,
it's not the worst theory. You can
check out my fanfiction at resistanceradio.net. No. it's not the worst theory, but it would tie them together. You know, it's something fun. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
I don't know. I feel like also that's a little obvious because everyone's been saying for like months that the obvious thing is that Jin in some way is connected to Rey, and everyone also believes that Luke is also connected to Rey in some way.
And there you go. So, they're connected together, and you know how they connected. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
No, I walked straight into that one. I enabled you for that joke straight away.
I know, right? All right. Well, okay. All right. In all seriousness, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us at our radio podcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Danya.
And may the force be with you. See you all next week. And we'll be talking about Rogue One. Oh my gosh. All right.
By the time we record next week, we will have experienced Rogue One.
And seen Rey's mother.